This is Gemma Redgrave, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
I'm Chris from Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material, a part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other astonishingly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Ryan, will you dissect it for me?
What?
You must have done it at school. Doesn't need to be elegant.
Good, because it won't be.
Nice lab. Very well equipped.
Thanks.
Right, first things first. How are you off for broad-spectrum antibiotics?
Yes, but only a small supply.
Graham? Jake? See if you can rig up an IV. We need to get some medicine into Adam, try and stabilise him.
I have no idea how to do that.
I'll give you a hand. I've seen a few intravenous drips in my time. Finally, it comes in handy.
I might need a high-powered microscope, blood cultures, rapid genome sequencing, a spectrophotometer, and a super-fast incubator.
I've got most of that.
Suki Cheng, on a Madagascan beach, excellently equipped and ready for anything. Oh, can I use your computer?
You've dialed into Gallifrey Public Radio. We're a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us for weekly discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and well beyond. Your hosts are Jay Witten.
I choose Death by Scotland.
Keir Hansen.
Arun, Arun, Arun.
And Haley Malley.
Darth Vader, he's a villain, right?
We travel through classic and new Who, explore the extended Whovian universe, and play a few games from time to time if we're left unsupervised. Oh, and a word on spoilers, we do discuss recent news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but don't worry. If we look too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning.
Welcome to episode 368 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where it's customary to remind us as often as possible that the choices we make as Earth-dwelling humanoids are probably 100 times worse than anything some malevolent alien species is planning to do. Yeah, you remember those styrofoam containers from your Big Mac? Yeah, I'm Jay.
I'm Keir.
And I'm Haley. And this week, we ignore the major sporting events of the day, but apparently also forget the mind-blowing events of the week before and the globe-spanning pseudo-environmental crisis, Praxeus. For a hot second, even the Doctor thought it was going to be Auton's. But in retrospect, would that have been better?
And that is our tee-up question to get initial reactions on this particular story. Six episodes in, we're now in the back half of Series 12, and we're recovering from a 1-2 punch of interesting revelations from the week prior. So We knew we were going to have to cool down a little bit, right? It happens all the time. You got to take breaks. So was this enough of a break, too much of a break, not enough of a break?
This is honestly what I was expecting last week, was just this kind of episode.
Okay. As far as the story itself, you know, knowing that it was going to be a little encapsulated, you know, let's just distract ourselves for a little while from everything that just happened and go see a movie kind of a thing. How did the story strike you, though?
It's one of those episodes that's very middle of the season, forgettable. I don't think there was really anything in particular wrong with it. It's just not the one you're going to think about when you're thinking about the season as a whole.
Okay. Jay?
I can absolutely agree with that. This is not one that's going to go down in the annals as, you know, some great... But I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought that this is the kind of thing you need after such a big episode where it's just like, okay... Calm down for a minute, you know, let things sink in, give it some time to breathe before you go back at it hard and heavy. But it's also, you know, it's also kind of just that quintessential Doctor Who story where it's like, all right, alien threat, we're going to examine it. It's, you know, go through the whole episode trying to figure it out, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of made sense as to why she's like, okay, I need to figure out what's going on with the Doctor, but this is a pressing matter and I'm going to focus on this until it's done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely see that. I think there's something going for this story in particular, because as a break story, as a catch your breath, you know, interstitial or what have you, it hits a lot of the common threads that we would expect these sort of one and done Doctor Who stories to do, but did it a little more effectively than the same sort of strategy just last season. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a little bit of a development with Pete McTee, and as far as his writing, or maybe, you know, a little bit of a lesson learned, or maybe a little bit of an additional kind of guiding hand from Chris Chibnall as the byline writer, because mm-hmm. I think Chibnall took secondary writing credit on both stories this season and last season.
Remind me what episode did Pete McTee do last season?
He was Kerblam.
Okay,
that's so. Right. And when you think about it, I start to see some little parallels as far as trying to make the supporting characters really engaging. Remember, there was that relationship between the two younger characters in Kerblam that was really a fascinating thing that you wanted to, you know, had this not been such a fraught with peril kind of situation, you would have wanted to know a little bit more about them and how this sort of a unrequited love thing kind of worked out, you know. But yeah. In this particular case, you've got the supporting relationship between Jake and Adam, right? Which is which is really complicated and messy. And Jake is a mess of a character with all kinds of backstory. That's like,
I love how Graham calls him out on that too.
Yeah, it's how you're a real catch. But it's like,
and Jake is you know, understandably, he's like, yeah, he's a very lucky bloke, you know. So you just kind of, yeah. He's like, yeah, no, you're right, but I'm not going to admit it.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's something where, in that particular case, there's enough that you could just unpack with Jake. Like every time he gets back on camera and has more than about three lines, you realize, oh, he's got baggage.
Oh yeah.
And there's baggage lined up behind his baggage, and on and on and on, right? From the moment you see him, you know, dropping a shoplifter and that kind of thing. But it's like, you know, that I think becomes a little bit of McTee's signature. He really wants all of the aspects of the story to have something that you, if that's your particular jam, that you can kind of sink your teeth into and say, all right, well, this aspect of the story really kind of calls to me. Maybe it's the adventure aspect of it, in the fact that we've got our team kind of scattered and each one is dealing with their own bit of concern and risk and danger at any given moment. But the Doctor is just that thread. Like, literally, she just keeps popping in to all of their scenes. You know, like, you don't even hear the TARDIS arrive. She's just, boom, yeah. She's there. You know, which I thought was kind of odd at first, but then it became kind of part of the shtick, right? But I have to say that when it came down to things like the as you mentioned in the intro, Jay, about the, you know, humans... Sometimes we're getting painted as being worse than any exterior threat, but in this particular case, it's an interesting little twist, right? Mm-hmm. Our own poor choices set us up for alien threats because we become the perfect petri dish, right?
Yep. But like, I mean, we're sitting there saying, okay, yeah, you can come and destroy our planet, but we're going to get to it before you do. It's like, nobody destroys our planet but us.
Right. Well, I honestly had to say, and I was doing this strictly in jest because I actually liked how it was being executed, but I had to turn to everybody else who was watching the episode at the halfway point where the microplastics conversation starts coming in, saying, ooh, they're going to hit us with the environmental justice message halfway through the episode rather than buttoning it on the end this time.
I felt like this was a much better executed version of that, though.
Yeah.
It didn't feel shoehorned in. It didn't feel like it was beating you over the head with it. It was just kind of like, hey, look what you did. Look what you did. Okay, let's move on now.
Right. Well, even less accusatory and more of a, you know, this is by your own hand. And now it's a mess, literally, that we have to deal with. Because it has repercussions even further than, well, in this particular case, even further than any of our local environmental scientists would have predicted. I don't think they were expecting calcification diseases to come flying out of nowhere. But I think as far as this recurring theme, and it really has been, I think this is really something that Chris Chibnall takes very seriously on personal level, because I can't even count how many stories over the last season and a half have focused specifically on environmental threats and concerns. And I don't
necessarily... It's almost like it's a pressing matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Is this the theme of Series 12? Does this explain the space for all marketing technique that they were dropping right before the season began? Because this is our space and we're all sharing it and we have to do something about it?
Possibly.
Haley, there was something I wanted to check with you on here. And it had to do with the fact that as our representative brainiac among our little trio here. Sorry, Jay. Having Suki as with the big reveal in the third act that she was actually one of the survivors of the crashing ship that brought this disease to our planet in the first place. How did the execution of that entire turn of the story sit with you?
I think it worked about as well as everything else in the story did. Mm-hmm. It was kind of nice to see, you know, the one that the doctor was bonding with be the one that turned on her. That was not the villain, but the antagonist.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was interesting that she wasn't particularly malevolent. You know, it wasn't like she was, in fact, she was trying to explain that it was a crash landing. They weren't expecting or they weren't planning to release everything into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But they were planning on using humans as their guinea pigs.
Sure. Well cadavers.
Picking one lab rat versus, you know, destroying the entire colony or something. Yeah, you know, they saw it as the lesser of two evils, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the dinosaur experimentation team that landed somewhere around the late Jurassic. And
yeah, they're not malevolent. They're just ambivalent to our death.
Yeah, you don't shed a whole lot of tears for everything that's in the dish. But, okay, so from little technical aspects, I mean, there were a lot of things that I particularly liked about, you know, I like the fact that they were using practical puppetry for some of the birds and things like that. I'm like, that's okay. Oh, good. I'm glad that, you know, not everything was handed over to D-Negative for doing their work. I didn't really need to see sixth grade science dissection again, but you did. But I still got to wonder about the two girls roaming. Mm-hmm. And their choice of where to set up camp in the first moments. You know, they come through this beautiful, pristine Peruvian, like they're wandering this beautiful countryside. The landscape is gorgeous. And they come through and they realize, oh, the river that we thought was going to be beautiful is this disgusting trash heap. Let's set up camp here.
But it was a jungle, right? Maybe there wasn't a good clear spot to set up their tent or whatever.
I don't know. I think I would get crafty with
buying it, Haley.
I'd make a.
I don't think you understand. It was in the script.
Yeah. Location shoots have to be cut short. Yeah. All right. Well, there are a couple more points to this particular story that I think need to get a little bit of airing out here. And one has to do with the fact that, especially just since the turn of our resolution, New Year's Day episode, I can actually say this, 7 episodes ago, feels weird. It looks as if either BBC or specifically BBC Wales or maybe just Chris Chibnall and his team are actively trying to push back against the burying the gays trope because of specifically, I mean, they took a lot of backlash for Resolution. And in this particular case, they at a moment when everybody was resigned to say, you couldn't have a gay couple that was going to try to work things out and everything was going to be all right at the end. They're going to kill off Jake. Oh, wait, no, they didn't kill off Jake. Wait a second. So is this a positive? I mean, is it just something where it's just circumstantial? How did it strike you?
I'm glad that, you know, they're fighting against it. I'm glad that it's not I'm glad that they didn't just continue with killing off all the gay characters. But in this instance, I feel like it kind of robbed the situation of some of the gravity. Like it almost would have been more rewarding watching it had Jake sacrificed himself after everything they'd been through, after reuniting with Adam, everything like that, being willing to sacrifice himself would have been a really good move for the character. And the Doctor kind of, you know, swooping in at the last second to get him is, well, it was nice. Like, I'm glad that, you know, we had the moment where they, you know, they're on the beach together at the end and all that stuff. It just, mm-hmm. I feel like it was the easier call to make, almost.
It also sits a little odd in this series because it seems like there were several times where the Doctor probably could have done something to save the Companions of the Week and didn't. And to do it this week in such a fantastic fashion, it kind of makes you wonder, like, well, why not those people?
Yeah. Mm. That was what I was thinking. Was honestly, the first thing that popped into mind was the two people at the end of the other environmental episode this season. I can't even remember the name of the episode.
The mom and daughter.
Yeah.
On the Orphan 55.
Like, that's not even like on an exploding spaceship. They're just standing there in the middle of the... I mean, it should have been very easy to materialize around them.
True. So, yeah. That's really true. But that, even that wasn't what a lot of the keen-eyed fan base caught on to while they were watching. There were a bunch of people, like a bunch of people that reacted and said, wait a second, companions and or, you know, friends of the Doctor in danger in a crashing spaceship, attempting to do something noble and sacrificing themselves either willingly or unwillingly, and an opportunity to save them in the final seconds. Oh, sorry, Adric.
No spoilers. Haley's not there yet.
I know.
Spoilers, but at least
Haley does know that we have the history of the lost companion, right? The one of the first really clear deaths of a companion that really shook the TARDIS team of the time and the viewers, right? But had to do with a crashing spaceship. And granted, in Earthshock, you were dealing with a TARDIS console that apparently had been compromised by Cybermen attack. Apparently. I think we might have just been tired of Adric. But
maybe the Doctor just didn't like Adric that much.
I mean...
But as far as Jake, I see your point about the... There would have been an interesting literary button to having the estranged partner who was an earthbound officer of the law dying in a fiery space crash after going to great lengths and traveling the globe to save the life of his astronaut husband, you right. know, and sort of that little poetic justice to it. But I think it's just as much a statement of the fact that when possible, and again, I understand, Haley, your point about, you know, the fact that Orphan 55, we could have done the same thing. But I think it might have just been something that one writer was more cognizant of than another. Shame on Chibnall for not catching the consistency throughout, but if that is the case. Or whether it's a matter of a conscious effort to balance and say there are some times where the circumstances, it occurs to them, and other times when it doesn't. So, you know, there are going to be... You know, I'm going back to Vincent and the Doctor here, you know, good things and bad things and and so forth, and that balance. I don't know if it runs that deep. I don't know if it was really cognizant, but everybody that kind of refers to the way that Chibnall balances his stories, or at least oversees his story editing, is very, very deliberate. So I don't know. I don't know if you can just say, you know what, he forgot.
And I mean, all in all, I feel like it was a decent bit of storytelling. It was, you know, it was exciting. I really thought up until the last few moments that he was going to die. And so it worked to tell the story that they were trying to tell. So, and it wasn't one of those like, oh, really? That's how you're going to, so it wasn't I didn't have a violent reaction towards the way that they wrapped it up.
Right.
I was just kind of ambivalent.
I wonder if it might parallel a little bit to the statement that they're making to us as far as some of, you know, going back to our environmental themes. Humanity, you have made some horrific choices. You have stumbled repeatedly along the way, and you've carried this relationship with Mother Earth along with you. But you have to find, you know, you have to give yourself the opportunities. You have to earn the opportunities to resolve that damage. And in this particular case, the relationship between Jake and Adam is something that apparently is rocky as hell. Jake is about as damaged goods can possibly be. And Adam, after spending way too much time in a stinky spacesuit, now has an opportunity to sit down with his husband and say, "All right, you know, we've been through emotional trauma, but now we've also been through physical trauma and life risking trauma together. We've earned ourselves the opportunity to try and resolve these things." I see a little bit of a, again, I don't know if it's intentional or unintentional, but I see a little bit of a parallel in that as well.
Yeah, I can see that.
Would you have any specific positives that you would pull out of the story and say, "I'm really glad they had an opportunity to do X, Y, or Z"?
Putting Graham and Yaz together.
Thank you. That was literally the top of my list, Haley. How did you feel that worked out, getting the two of them to be able to bomb around a bit?
I thought it was fun. Like, we've played the Graham and Ryan dynamic to death at this point, and we've had Ryan and Yaz together quite a bit. It's fun to see those two together and her, you know, being like the young person that understands how to hold the phone.
Behind that wall, behind that door.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah,
the comedy is very different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't like, you know, if you had Ryan in that situation, he would have, like, you know, been exasperated, like, "Oh my God, you know, it's just..."
Yeah.
And Yaz just flips
there would
it
have
over
been a snarky comment.
Exactly.
With that.
Yaz just flips it over and goes, "You're welcome." Yeah. It's like, that was absolutely one of the highlights of this episode for me.
Yeah. I think Yaz was a very police constable in this one.
Yeah.
And specifically, she says, "I don't go around, you know," she made the comments previously that "I don't go around talking about my title" kind of thing, which says a bit for the way that she exerts her authority and the way that she executes her functions as far as when that sort of instinct kicks in. She just does it. She's not looking to remind people that she's trained in doing these things. She just does these things so the situation resolves itself, hopefully, and moves on. When she deals with, when she's working with Graham, it's not dealing with him. He's not that problematic.
Well, no,
he's not. I mean, he's whatever. You know. His heart's
I
in
love
the right
Graham.
As long as you keep him well fed.
Exactly.
It is. It's something where, you know, it's like it goes along with, you know, ways that she would question people at the scene of some sort of a disturbance kind of thing. You know, she's speaking calmly. She's asking the right leading questions. She's always dialed into the details. And even when she does get emotionally invested in things, she's aware of the fact that she's emotionally invested in them, you know, whether or not she can sort of, you know, tap out of the situation if she feels that it's compromising the integrity of whatever it is that she's attempting to do. I'm loving everything that we've been getting from Yaz this season in particular, which really, really ticks off a lot of boxes of concerns that I had coming out of series 11. I'm just really glad that she's now getting these kinds of opportunities. I'm waiting for her to have her one-to-one sit down with the doctor. Something's going to happen where she's going to be able to, just like Graham has had his moments of really kind of leaning into the doctor and saying, "No, we've been through some things, and we share and change and sacrifice a lot for you, and we kind of expect the same." I want to hear what Yaz's side of this conversation is when it's just the two of them.
I don't think that Yaz is going to be as sympathetic. Like, she seems like she's
right.
Getting a little bit more frustrated with the doctor.
I think that's good.
Do you guys also think that Yaz is kind of reckless this season? Like, doing a few things without necessarily considering the consequences?
Can you give me a for instance?
Well, particularly this episode, taking that teleport to she doesn't know where.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't chalk that up to recklessness per se, so much as it is she's learning from the doctor's MO. Not nearly to the sort of degree of a Clara, sort of, you know, the addiction to the danger kind of thing that we've seen many, 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 many times before. But this is more of a, you know, if I've learned anything, when you're in a really horrible situation, push a button. That's kind of how I wrote that one off.
Yeah, it seems like there was definitely that moment when she was almost pleading with the doctor. It's like, "Let me stay, let me do something." Mm-hmm. And when she goes and the camera just hangs on the doctor for half a second in the door of the TARDIS, and I was like, oh God, no. Like, I really thought something was going to happen because they took that beat for you to
because
like...
Because it didn't happen, now I'm like, when is it going to happen?
Exactly.
Good point. What else kind of jumped at you?
I like the reference to Grace without actually saying it.
Oh my God, yes.
That was done beautifully.
And it was a split second. It was just the hang of the camera. And I, God damn, if Bradley Walsh is not a 100 times more impressive, subtle actor as he is a comedic actor. Yeah. Damn. Because that was perfect. In fact, on second watch, even because I knew the moment was coming, I kind of
So you're paying more attention.
Exactly. And I was fixated on it because I wanted to see exactly how he made that choice of just that little pop of the eyebrows and that tiny little curl at the corners of his mouth saying, yeah, I know someone extraordinary too. It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Like that was worth 10 times all of the, you know, the ham-fisted references last series.
Right. But nonetheless, to Grace.
To Grace.
I was going to say, when we watch this one with the drinking rules, still applies.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Without question. Because that in that one, the subtext might as well have subtitles.
The fact that Ryan was just, you know, he was okay with everything. He would like seemed very in control of whatever situation he was in. You know, when he first met Gabrielle on the beach, he's like, don't touch the bird. Here's that, you know, he's very easy to put her at ease, you know, kind of take control of the situation. And then the doctor's like, hey, dissect that bird. And he's like, do what now? But then just goes and does it. You know, he is rolling with the punches like a champ at this point, and I love it.
Man, such a throwback to, you know, like 6th and 7th grade science, man. Dissecting the, I can't. But just the flashbacks.
I also loved how Gabriella just assumed she was much more famous than she was.
that was
like
a great
every time
bit.
She met someone, she's like, well, obviously you know who I am. And that speaks to every like YouTuber and vlogger there is. It's like, I have over 60 followers. How do you not know who I am?
Right. I am stunned at this point that they have not, I mean, with the way that they used to beat on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Right, that used to be like their kind of whipping boy, as far as making social media jokes. This year, you know, there was that quick comment that was made about, you know, I friended you on Facebook and you ignored me, kind of thing. So, all right, we're stepping up to Facebook now. When do we get to the point where YouTube and TikTok get their fair share of the attention? I mean, I can't. When you start looking up celebrity birthdays. Right, and you wonder, oh, you know, I heard today was a, you know, like this coming Friday is Charles Dickens' birthday, right? Like, oh, that's awesome. So we're all gonna go watch that great Charles Dickens story, little Charles Dickens, Doctor Who story, of course, because Eve Miles. But then I'm looking that up, and before Charles Dickens, when I look up celebrity birthdays for this week, don't ask me why I was doing this, but there were like 15. Names I didn't recognize, and all 15 of them were either YouTubers or TikTok stars. Not like you know, big TikTok account. They're called stars. So they need their moment in the Doctor Who strange, I don't understand you people social media statements, as far as I'm concerned.
Anyway. I've seen what it takes is somebody that understands the platform to be able to poke jokes at it.
True. So that's why Twitter is safe, because Twitter is all boomers and middle-aged cranky pants.
Well, on TikTok, nobody old enough to write a television script is using it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Talk to your kids, everybody. Talk to your kids. In the news scope, there is a little bit of a... we'll call this... that's what we thought was going on sort of answer to all of our comments over the past calendar year about where the heck are all of Bradley Walsh's hilarious on-set Instagram posts and everything else from the BBC marketing department as far as what was happening with the production of Series 12. They were taking photos. They were recording great little videos. They were even doing little Snapchat filters and all these things. We just didn't see them because the legal department was on their game.
Yeah.
So, but I guess the fun thing is now for everybody who sort of stuck it out, I guess their NDAs exhaust themselves day of broadcast or something like that, because it seems like everybody that gets to work on these episodes now gets to post everything like as the episode is airing and say, oh, you know, it was a great pleasure doing this, that, and the other, being on set and meeting Jody and da 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 da, and here's every photo on my phone. That I took while I was there. Bleah.
A disconcerting amount of pasty British guys in Jadoon outfits.
I'm telling you, man, the Jadoon crew loved those outfits, man. That's a lot of Judanese. Wow.
It's like the first one you see with his helmet off, you're like, oh, that's weird. And then you scroll down and it's just like the entire platoon. It's like, whoa, what are you doing?
Well, they don't get on camera much without prosthetics, so...
No, yeah.
But yes, that also... There was one little thing that David Marshall and a couple of other friends of ours were able to glean out of the array of social media notes that came out. And one had to do with the fact that if you felt like in last week's episode, in Fugitive of the Jadoon, that the Jack scenes had a very different feel to them... As far as sort of everything about the framing of the scenes, the pace of the scenes, the look and feel and everything of that sort. Yes, we understand it was supposed to be happening on a ship out, you know, on the outer skirts of the galaxy or whatever. But if it had a slightly different overall tone to it, it's because you had two different directors. So if Nita Manzur, I'm pulling the name from memory, I hope I got it right, was working on everything that was being shot in Gloucester as far as around the cathedral and so forth for the episode proper, as we know it. All the Jack scenes were shot, as we know, 6 or so months prior, back from, remember what Barrowman was saying about having to do it under veil of secrecy and everything. Mm-hmm. Those were directed actually by... Jamie Magnus, name who's eluding me at the moment, who directed this episode, because they had to do it during that point in the production. So, different director, slightly different vision, kind of explains a little bit of the disparity, I guess you could say. Jack scenes. I'm trying to articulate how Jack scenes felt a little different with our TARDIS team. Companions from the episode proper. A slightly different camera usage felt a little dreamscapey, I guess.
Kind of, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I really have to start looking at them individually and kind of see where the different artist's hand makes for a different canvas on that one. But
I noticed that it was very different, but I thought a lot of that was chalked up to John Barrowman bringing in just a very different tone to the show than we're used to seeing for the last many seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you would think, oh, okay, so we're going to go this route because this is going to be, you know, sort of all about Jack every time the camera cuts back to these moments. But no, there's you got to incorporate a couple of different hands on the helm in that case. So, yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. But that, again, that sort of pulled out of the fact that now, I really hope this doesn't become habitual, the cast and crew are loving the production process and having fun on set and doing all these things and capturing all these moments. They're just not allowed to share a damn thing anymore because there's too many secrets being hidden right now. So that leaves me hope for even more secrets because we didn't hear about any of the episodes to follow either. So
yeah.
That means even more stuff is on legal lockdown. Ooh.
Well, I mean, given the way that everything left off, I imagine that it is very much going to be a, you know, we're going to get more of that. And so they had to keep everything locked down because it all kind of pertains to that one thing. So.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can't tell a handful of people, oh, what are you sharing? Oh, is that just a clapper? you know, from the beginning of the scene? No, I don't want to share that because that has so-and-so's name on it, or you can make out this or this in the background. Mm-hmm. If you have to fine comb it like that, just you put the blanket over everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Mark thine calendars. At this point, if you haven't already done all of the badge redistributions and resells and everything to make your plans to get yourself out to Los Angeles in roughly about 10 days or so for the 31 Flavors of Gallifrey 1, we'll see you in the parking lot, I guess. Because at this point, all the badges that have been distributed and redistributed and handed over to your best friends, aunts, brothers, valet, driver, or what have you, are done, and we will just see everybody at the registration desk on the Thursday after next to get this thing kicking. We'll do a little bit of a rundown of what we're hoping is going to happen as far as with the massive talent roster, obviously Christopher Eccleston and Pearl Mackey headlining, but everything else that's going to be going on over the course of that weekend, meetups and all that good stuff. So we'll go into more detail on that next week. But one thing that we can say for absolute certainty is that for all of you who have been pining for 10 years-ish, 10 mm-hmm. years, for a reunion of the 10th Doctor and Rose Tyler and Captain Jack, go to sleep.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
We never thought it was going to. But, you know, you never close the door. You just kind of, like, just set the knob.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But with Behrman's, obviously, you know, with his return last week, it got everybody wondering, does this mean? And even he had to come forward and say, no, this does not mean. It was a nice idea. I guess they had a sit-down conversation about it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Behrman and Tennant apparently. I'm hoping at some point. I don't know whether they can really kind of contain it to do. David Tennant does a podcast with
that John. Would be so much fun.
Oh my god, it'd have to be like 3 episodes long. but they did have a dinner at some point and kind of talked it through. And I think they all kind of came to the agreement that it's just not, you know, the place for that is not here anymore.
Yeah.
As much as a certain degree of fan satisfaction to a subset of the fan base would really want to see that, would it really be doing justice to what they want to do? Now, I don't know if what that means for audio. That could be, because you know, you could be as young and vibrant as you want to be right behind a microphone. I mean, I'm 22.
I don't know. I think that it's rife for stuff like, you know, Big Finish or whatever, you know, and write the comics, do all those kinds of things. But for the show proper, it's the time has passed, and you know, you don't want to stagnate. We need to move forward. There always has to be that change, otherwise, you know, the show wouldn't still be going on.
Mm-hmm.
So to be pining for something like this 10 years on, you have to realize that there's an expiration date on this kind of stuff.
Right. And also to a certain degree, I have to wonder if there isn't the encouragement. And it's obviously not in the foreground, but there is a sort of the subtext of, we really want you to enjoy what we're doing right now. Not only what Doctor Who is doing right now, but what all of our respective careers, for those of us who have done the show and have now moved on to other things, we want you to follow our current body of work. Please and thank you very much.
Right. Acknowledge what I'm doing now, not what I did a decade ago.
Right. Is there any way that you could possibly ask David Tennant a question at a convention now about his time working on Doctor Who that he has not been asked? Is there really, really the thought that you could do that? And no, I don't mean asking him to read another Doctor's monologues, because that's just, I'm done. But, you know, so...
Yep.
And especially with Billy, I mean, she's going on to do all these really kind of far-reaching projects and really kind of stretch her CV and so forth. Behrman is, well, he's Behrman. He's just Behrman, 110%. But yeah, so I'm kind of glad. I just hope more people paid attention to it, because I'm sure that there are a lot of people who don't sort of tap into a lot of the same newsfeed articles that we come across that say, all right, you know, move on, kids. You know, there's new things to watch and read and do that are still going to be asking for it. But
we can see them again in the 75th anniversary special.
It's going to be fantastic. It's a cracker.
Well, next week we're going to be coming back with episode 7, Can You Hear Me? And I've seen two different Next Time trailers for this one. Mm. And it looks like it might be a little bit spooky.
I like spooky. I've only seen the really, really short one. The 12 seconds. Is there a longer cut?
No, it's just a different cut. I've noticed that the BBC and BBC America have different trailers at the ends.
Hmm.
So the BBC America had more action shots to it, where the BBC was just like character.
That is so telling. Man, right? I tuned in from the Super Bowl to see a bunch of people get blowed up. Yeah, because all I saw was the scene of one of our characters getting choked around the face by some really beautifully manicured nails. That's about all I recall. But yeah, so I guess we're dealing with we're gonna have more home issues, right? So we're gonna have all three of our space fam going back and trying to resume their lives at home. And I hope that we get at least more than just a couple of minutes of those kind of scenes before all the action kicks in proper. Because I'm always curious about, you know, what happens in the moments in between. So
right, yeah, no, it looks like it's gonna be fantastic. I can't wait to see it.
Cool.
This has been episode 368 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, look at you, going off on your own and not getting killed.
And this is Kier saying, oh, that's why you smell of dead bird. I thought you changed your shower gel.
And this is Haley saying, I'm a sucker for a scientist.
We'll see you guys next week.
I'm LZ.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2020. See you next week.